In lieu of numbers, competing narratives on the Republican tax plan. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. We've been covering the framework for the Republican tax changes. President Trump told an audience in Indiana last evening that the plan is, quote, pro-jobs, pro-worker, and pro-family. The president found himself in front of an enthusiastic crowd there in Indianapolis.
Thank you very much. You just want massive tax cuts. That's what you want. That's the only reason you're going so wild.
The first $24,000 would be tax-free under this plan. Corporate taxes would fall from 35 to 20% and much more, as we've been reporting. Less enthusiastic today are critics of the plan who see this biased against lower-income Americans. I'm joined now live by Marketplace's Kimberly Adams in Washington. Kimberly, what's not to like here from the perspective of the leaders of the loyal opposition?
Right. As you would expect, the Democrats are in strong opposition to this framework. They say it helps the wealthy and corporations more than the poor and middle class. Some of the strongest opposition we've heard about this framework so far has come from Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, who complained about things like the repeal of the estate tax, the potential loss of state and local income tax deductions, and the increase in the lowest tax rate.
Under this plan, the wealthiest Americans and wealthiest corporations make out like bandits, while middle-class Americans are left holding the bag.
So we can expect to hear more of this line of argument from Democrats as this debate progresses. And Schumer and others are also criticizing the lack of detail on how to pay for all these tax cuts.
I mean, is this a political argument, or can we fact-check whether this plan helps or hurts lower-income people?
It is hard to pin down these details right now because this outline is so light on details and leaves a lot of these decisions to Congress. But nonpartisan tax analysis groups like the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities and the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center are leaning closer to Schumer's narrative that this framework would help wealthy Americans more than the poor and middle class, that it helps corporations more than small businesses, and that it will be very difficult to pay for.
Kimberly, thanks. With so many in Puerto Rico still without enough water, food, medical care, fuel, electricity, some in Congress are pressing the Trump administration to lift a 1920s law covering seaports in an effort to speed up aid. What's called the Jones Act says only ships made in the U.S. with U.S. crews can ferry goods between U.S. ports. Marketplace's Ryan Kyloth has more.
When Harvey and Irma hit the Gulf Coast, oil tankers had to move out of harm's way. That meant after the storm, there weren't enough U.S. ships to move fuel. So the Department of Homeland Security lifted the Jones Act. But after Hurricane Maria,
there are sufficient numbers of U.S. vessels to move commodities to Puerto Rico,
says DHS spokesman David LePan. The real problem isn't getting supplies to Puerto Rico, he says. It's getting them off the boat and distributed. Ports, roads, and airfields are all wrecked. Now, lifting the Jones Act could play a role in Puerto Rico's long-term recovery.
The Jones Act makes shipping products from the mainland to remote locations more expensive.
That's David Hackett, president of the transportation research firm Stillwater Associates. He says U.S. ships have high labor and performance requirements that add to the cost of what they carry. That raises prices in places like Hawaii, Alaska, and Puerto Rico. Some lawmakers say waiving the Jones Act for a year or two could help speed recovery on the island. In New York, I'm Ryan Kyloth for Marketplace.
It is hard to overstate the role of car manufacturing on Europe's largest economy. The big brands, VW, BMW, Audi, Mercedes, Porsche, account for 20% of all of Germany's exports of manufactured goods. But German car making's in trouble as the world increasingly questions that industry's favorite fuel. Our Stephen Beard reports from Frankfurt.
At the recent motor show in Frankfurt, visitors were invited to step into a racing car simulator.
There is an emergency stop button above your head. Hold tight. Here we go.
Not a bad metaphor for the wild ride the German carmakers have been on, buffeted by lawsuits over alleged anti-competitive behavior and threatened with fines. They now face a potentially fatal collision with the energy revolution, says one of Germany's top economists, Marcel Fratscher.
They haven't really embraced electromobility. They're really stuck in past technology, trying to get as much money out of that technology as possible. And that could prove fatal for the German car manufacturers.
It was pushing diesel cars that led Volkswagen and other companies into Dieselgate, the installation of fraudulent software to hide toxic diesel emissions. That scandal, says industry analyst Ferdinand Dudenhofer, savaged the popularity of diesel and the credibility of German carmakers.
The German car manufacturer have to fight hard to get new trust from the customers. At the moment, you can buy the VW Golf for 44% discount.
But change is on the way, he says. The scandal has jolted the industry out of its hubris and complacency.
You could say, thanks God, there was Dieselgate, because they realized they have to go in another direction.
VW now says it'll spend 80 billion euros over the next decade on electric, hybrid and autonomous vehicles. Richard Gall, a former senior executive at BMW, has no doubt all the big German car companies will follow suit.
The German car industry is extremely strong business-wise. This means they have the money to invest.
Within 5 years, he says, the German industry will be making 50% of all electric cars on the planet, either a well-founded prediction or a further sign of the hubris that has laid the reputation of the German carmakers low. In Frankfurt, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.